Hello and welcome to Off the Roll. I'm your host, Troy Hirschman. Today's guest is Bill Cowgill. Bill is the Associate Director of Sports Medicine at the University of Kansas. He takes care of men's basketball and men's golf. Bill's been at Kansas for 21 years, and in that time, he's had two national championships with men's basketball and is part of a special group of Ball State athlete training alumni that we call the Club that either have national championships or Super Bowl wins or World Series wins or whatever under their belt as they've worked with those teams. Bill's story is very interesting. He's had definitely a long and winding road and some pretty unique places, all the way from Rensselaer, Indiana to Miami to South Bend and now Lawrence, Kansas. So it's a great story. We have a great guest host in Neil Hayes in this podcast. So Neil's going to interject on a few things as well. So let's go off the roll with Bill Cowgill. Welcome to Off the Roll. I'm your host, Troy Hirschman. I'm here with Bill Cowgill, the Associate Director of Sports Medicine at the University of Kansas, a 1994 Ball State alum, also a Ring of Honor member. And my guest host today is Neil Hazen. So Neil's joining us as well.
Hello, everybody.
Hi, Bill.
Hey, Troy. Thanks for having me.
So, like, I'm going to kick this off a little bit like I've kicked every other podcast off, is that, first of all, where are you from? Where's your hometown?
I'm originally from Highland, Indiana. Shout out to all you listening that are from the region. I grew up, born and raised in Highland, Indiana.
Yeah, we'll hit some numbers with this podcast with that alone. You know, once it gets out of the region that Bill Kelga was on this podcast, that'll jump my numbers so far. It'll be awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully I get a couple more hits than Lito.
So. Here we go. Yeah. So what did you do in high school? Were you an athlete? What were you doing that made you kind of maybe think about getting into athletic training?
Well, actually nothing in high school directed me that way. Which is funny because I listened to a couple podcasts last night, as I was telling you before we got on here. I too was going the architecture route and chose Ball State. So in high school though, I was a semi athlete, played basketball for a couple of years, and then I think I got cut my junior year, played soccer 4 years and dabbled a little bit in track and field. Actually, the sport I was best at was softball. Actually, they had a boys and men's softball was big, actually in Indiana, but in that region. And I played, and pitched fast pitch softball till I was a junior in college, actually. So, so that's kind of what I did in high school. And I actually was I went to Highland High School, and they actually had some classes and courses for kind of some beginning drafting architecture stuff. So that's where I was going when I came to Ball State. And not a great student, so as you guys know, the prestige of the architecture program at Ball State, it was, you know, a 5-year program. And I think at that time they were admitting like 2 or 3 people into the new class every year from the on-campus pool. And like the 7 or 8 other spots were for incoming freshmen. So I knew people with 4.0s were on the list, and I was not even close to that GPA. So my roommate came home my freshman year there and said, hey, I did some observation, like a little orientation thing with these guys that are doing sports medicine and their athletic training program. You might want to check it out. His name is Dave Malosnick. He was a friend of mine from Highland. So that's kind of, I went and checked it out because I wasn't going to do the architecture thing. So obviously love for sports. my whole life, and checked it out and met the old crew down in the I think it was in the health center at that time, a little bitty training room. So it was, you know, Rex, Tony, Neil. I'm sure Tony was busy at that time and was not around, but Comer was there as well. So I do remember all those guys, my first venture into the Ball State athletic training world.
Was Joe Burton in there?
No, I don't remember Joe Burton being in there.
At least been in there at the time, right?
Right.
Oh man. So what was your first observation? I mean, you went down and met him, but what do you remember what you did, your first observation with that?
You know, I my memory kind of sucks. I want to say my first few times observing down there, I think it was Sean seemed to be working harder than all the other guys in the room usually. So no, I'm joking. But I actually think Sean was doing some stuff with some baseball guys, and I think like an ultrasound and different things with the shoulder exercises. So, you know, that was kind of my first seeing some clinical stuff. And you know, the thing that drew me to wanting to do it more was, and to this day, just the relationships, and the people that were in the room. And, you know, there's some good work being done there, and serious most of the times in our profession, but just a atmosphere of having fun. And, you know, 30 years later now, you know, you know that when those kids are in there, that's not always the funnest time for them.
Right.
But, you know, I learned observing there that, you know, the family atmosphere, obviously, and then the hard work and the dedication to, and then making the time in there spent doing rehab or treatment or whatever to make that light and fun. So it's not kind of takes you away from, you know, I'm not able to do my sport or I'm not able to do my thing. So I think that's what drew me to it. And obviously being able to, you know, see what they were doing, Neil and Rex and those guys, and helping athletes get back. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that's, that was a big draw for all of us, really, was the ability to connect and do those things. And you get to do some cool stuff because you're hanging around some student athletes and stuff. But if you had a little bit of an interest in medicine, it was a good connect to do those things. And I tell you, the thing about the health center, and looking back on it, is that the smallness of the health center, you had to kind of talk to people. You know, you couldn't just stand around in there and not talk to people, because it was so stinking small in there, that you had to stay entertained and engaged a little bit. Otherwise, there was no reason for you to be in there, you know, and
right.
And that was always the cool thing about that. So you're observing, I mean, you kind of decide, hey, I might want to do this. Do you remember applying for the program? And did we have interviews back then?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember interviewing?
Yeah, I do. Cause I was told to kick rocks another semester. So, it started out great. I was excited, and then it, you know, it gets closer and you start talking to people and they're like, you know, this isn't a home run. You're not just going to walk in there and answer a few questions and everybody gets signed up. You know, it was, which again, you know, I talked to people a little bit about it when they ask, you know, it was very competitive back then, in Ball State's program. And, you know, looking back and talking to other people, I definitely think it was, it was the premier program, definitely in the state. Sorry, Purdue. No, seriously, it was nerve-wracking doing it and going through the first time. You do figure it out. You're like, okay, this is a little more serious than and a lot more competitive than I thought. So yeah, the first time I didn't get in, but I again, I had seen enough and been around enough that I really wanted to do that. And I think I scheduled a meeting with Rex to talk about, what I can do to improve that. And then talking to I think I taught I and I don't remember who it was. It might have been I can't remember his name now. Anyway, a couple of the students that were already in the program kind of given me a little heads up as to, what I could do. And basically at that time it was, you needed to be around more and you needed to see more. So when you're in those interviews, you can tell them what you have seen and not just your book stuff, So they want to know why you guys wanted to know why somebody wanted to be part of that family and was that going to be a good fit and back to joking, we know that a couple guys you guys missed on that you let in the program that we are all good friends with and that probably shouldn't have been in the program, but I'm probably one of them,
Well, no, I don't think so. What? Chris Sunderman? What?
Burford? I don't
Yeah, and again, you were kind of in that, you were in that group where there was a little bit of transition because I think Mike was probably coming back from his doctoral stuff, and they were hiring Tom, and from an academic standpoint, that was going on. But we still, the main core of who you related to were the clinical staff. So Rex and Tony and Neil and Vicky, Trish, whatever, we'll throw those out there as well. But I mean, those are the people that you still connected with in that aspect to try to know that that's who you needed to find out from to get into the program. So I mean, yeah. So do you remember what your first sport assignment was when you did get in the program? Do you remember what your first sport assignment was?
I believe my first sport assignment was with football.
So what year would have that have been?
You're going to put me on years now. I don't know. What was that?
Was it 91 or 92?
91, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Well,
I don't have the pictures in front of me, so I can tell you right away.
Yeah. I
Do you remember who
think
was with you on that? Maybe that might help a little bit.
who was with me as far
Student
as
wise.
working?
Yeah.
I'd have to look at the picture too. I think our fan favorite Oda Hall was in there.
Yeah, it is 91. Yeah, because I know that picture now.
JP was in there.
Yeah, that was 91. That was black
Comer,
shirts.
I
That
think
was the black shirts.
Comer was still a GA.
Yeah, with his porn mustache.
Yes. And that first year, I believe that's when we went to the Las Vegas Bowl.
Would that have been?
See, 89, we went to the Raisin Bowl. 93 was our first year at the Vegas Bowl, and then we went again in
So maybe it's
96.
93.
If I graduated in 94, I don't know.
You were at football. That's all you need to know.
I was at football to start. I know that for sure. And I think I had two stints with football. I don't think I think I might have did a little bit with track and field my first year, maybe.
That would make sense too. Yeah.
But then the other sports that I worked and it seemed like besides basketball, I was kind of on my own except when I got put on double secret probation because my grades were so good. So I had to go back to being supervised by another student, and that was in my senior year when we were working men's volleyball.
Men's volleyball. You got any men's volleyball stories? Come on, everybody's got a Don story.
Hey, buddy.
At least you didn't get called out in front of a bunch of luncheon people about taking a shower with Kevin Lasseau on his shoulders. You know, that was me.
And being called Toby.
Called Toby. Yeah. Hey, Toby.
No, I don't have any Dodd stories, but that was a good group. We went to the Final Four that year. So,
yeah.
Todd Reimer and those guys. I mean, that was a really good, really good, fun year.
That was the thing about men's volleyball. I don't know if anybody we knew that did it, but that was just a fun group to be around. I mean, you worked your butt off, but that group was just fun. They were just all good, fun loving guys, and there was some mischief. I mean, you know, you're with Reimer, and was Dave Bear on that team?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. There was a lot of shenanigans, but it was a good time.
And that was the Final Four up in Fort Wayne that year, wasn't it?
Yes. Yep. Yep.
So I believe a precursor to the rest of your career.
What's that?
What was your first Final Four? You go, men's volleyball, Ball State.
Hey, that was pretty good. I think that was the first year that a non-West Coast team had won. I think that's when Penn State came on the scene.
Yeah.
Because we lost a 5-game set with Penn State.
And they had those crazy Puerto Ricans, didn't they? Is that they have those Penn State?
Can't remember. I mean, we had a really good team.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I can't remember one of the he was kind of a backup guy, but he ended up coaching the women at Texas for a little while. He was an assistant coach at Texas because he came here and we ran into each other actually, because they were like, hey, this guy that's an assistant with Texas said that he worked with, he was with you at a Ball State. I can't remember. He was like a Puerto Rican kid, I think, he was our backup setter because we had, I think his name was Eddie Faraz or something like that, was our setter at that time.
Yeah.
He was really good.
And it was this, you're talking about a backup setter?
Yeah. He was a little dude because they had quite a bunch. I mean, obviously they had some big dudes.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I did okay. That.
I mean, that's the thing about it is that, you know, in these podcasts, a lot of times we're just trying to jar stuff up a little bit, you know, because you start thinking about, you know, who you're students with and all this other stuff. And it's hard to recall that stuff because there's been so much go on beyond that. Like even athletes for me, I don't know how it is for you, but like, you know, I thought I would never forget some athletes. And yeah, somebody goes, do you remember who you worked with at, you know, St. Joe's? I'm like, I could probably bring up 5 athletes I worked with at St. Joe's. So, you know, I mean, because it's been that long ago, if I was lucky. Yeah. So,
yeah.
So
I also, you know, then I also worked, and to this day, the toughest athletes I've ever worked with in my entire career. I worked women's gymnastics for their competitive season, whatever that was then. And those girls were, it's unbelievable how tough they are. And Troy, I know you have a lot of experience with that sport. It still amazes me to this day. You know, they're out of their prime and they just push themselves and play through so much and compete with through so much. So I did that. And then I also got to, you know, who really kind of taught me the ropes and the insides and outsides of men's big time basketball, obviously working with Tony And I was a junior student, so Matt Matinich was my senior student at that time, and learned a lot from Matt, especially patience and being kind of, you know, just calm and cool all the time. Most of the time, at least with Matt, but that's when I really, I had a love for basketball growing up in Indiana anyway. And then being able to work, work with TC and the program, then, Hunsaker was the coach then. We had won the MAC tournament, I think, that year. And oddly enough, we were ousted in the NCAA tournament by Kansas.
That's right. Chicago. Wow. Up at the Rosemont.
At the Rosemont.
That's right.
Yeah. And at that time, the lower seeds really got taken care of, because we were at the hotel across the street from the Rosemont Horizon, where you had to go outside to get to the next room. So
you really were taken care of.
Did they give you a knife and a gun when you checked in so you had security?
Welcome to the tournament.
that was the team with Jamie Matthews and Bill Gillis, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
We were, I think we were down. We were down seven, maybe, with 10 or 11 minutes left in the game, and Gillis had fouled out. And after that, Kansas was pretty good. So,
yeah.
But it was a good game for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. That's that. I remember watching a little bit of that game. It was just, again, you were just outgunned, you know, which now you're on the other side of that sometimes. Anyway, so you finish up at Ball State, and you're trying to decide what to do. What are you talking about that time? You know.
So I wanted to go to graduate school. That was kind of the path that a lot of people that I was in school with at the time. That's kind of the path that you were looking at, especially if you wanted to go and stay in college athletics. That was, at that time, seemed like you kind of really didn't have a chance of getting a collegiate job at any collegiate level if you didn't have your master's. So I started on that journey, and I remember a funny story. So I had, at that time, I'd become pretty close with TC, and I talked to Rex about some things, you know, my list of schools that I was looking at. So I take my list to Tony, and he just looks at me like he can look at you for a while. And I'm like, okay, what did I do? You know, he goes, Billy, is this really your list? And I said, yes. He goes, did you just open up the USA Today and go to the top 25 schools in college football and say, these are the schools I'm going to apply for? And I was like, well, no, but he goes, there's no other schools besides these elite schools that you want to go to. And I was like, no. So anyway, long story short, I get interviews with everybody's help. And that's a big thing back then at Ball State. Our staff was so well connected around the country, especially in the Midwest, but around the country, that they could open doors for you to have a chance and an opportunity to get a job or a position somewhere that you wanted to be. And that was crazy. It didn't seem like there was anybody in my time at Ball State in athletic training program that didn't at least get an opportunity to take a shot at something that they really wanted, because of Rex Neal and Tony and other alumni that were out there before, you know, the Litos, the Revs. Yeah.
I'm going to backtrack a little bit, because
yeah.
You had something a little bit in between this time where you graduated and you ended up in grad school, but this little internship with the Colts.
I was hoping you weren't going to fly by that, because
you had this little internship with the Colts where you get to greet you get to hang out with the great Hunter Smith and the great Dave Hammer.
Oh, I'll tell you what, I learned so much in that intern, and I was so thankful to get it. At that time, it seemed like Rex was really tied in with those opportunities. And obviously, I think some people in the program kind of felt maybe slighted, but, I looking back at it now, doing kind of the same things the past 20 years, when you're referring kids to go places, you did have to be selective of who you put your name on, because, once you get one of those pipelines like Ball State had with the Patriots and the Colts, obviously, because they were right down the street, but those are important, and those positions are hard to get. And if they're always going to look at one of your kids, we actually had a decent pipeline here when we had our program with the Patriots and Jimmy and those guys. So after Ron left. So, but anyway, yeah. So I really wanted to go to the Patriots, and Ron, as you guys, I think I heard in another podcast, was taking forever to determine who he was going to take. So then Hunter called, it might've been Hammer, I don't know, but, and they offered me. So I asked Rex, I was like, what should I do? I haven't heard back from the Patriots yet. And he's like, well, give Ron a call. He'll shoot you straight. So I called him. He's like, Billy, you're in the mix still. We've been busy. We haven't really cut it down to more than, he goes, I think we have 10 of you and we're going to take 5 or something. I don't remember. But he's like, he goes, Hunter's a great man. And that's what they do, some really good things there. So my advice to you now and going forward as a Ball State kid is, if they have a position for you, take it, because I can't promise I'm going to have one for you. So,
right.
So that's, and I really appreciate Ron, and you guys know him as well, and everybody listening to this probably, but then through the years, he's been a guy that anytime you pick up the phone and call, he'll give you any advice and mentorship. And that was definitely some good advice, because it took me down the road and got to be part of an elite group of Ball Staters that have been with Hunter and Hammer. So,
well, at least you didn't trip over the 30-yard line coming off the field and splattering everything all over the field and end up on the Jumbotron. I mean,
you may have witnessed that, though.
Yeah.
And Ron had some family connections out there in Lawrence as well. So,
yeah, he does. I think, I believe his sister lives out here.
Yeah.
Yeah. I still have Ron. Let me. Ron was out here when he was working with his Andover, right?
Yeah.
Forever. So he'd come out and he would do, a course with us. And as everybody knows, I don't think there's a, he's probably Wizard is the best, is the best way to, for it. As far as a guy with a roll of tape and what he could do, unbelievable the tricks he could teach you. So anyway, he was here and we went golfing, and I was putting on one of the holes and the face of my putter fell off. And that was pretty funny, because we were laughing about that. So Ron had two putters in his bag, so he let me use one, and I still have that putter in an old bag. And I it was so funny, because every time I would see Ron, he'd be like, yeah, anytime you want to give me that putter back, it'd be great. And I still have it in my garage to this day.
I'm not giving it back. This Ron O'Neill gave me this putter.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, no offense, Ron, but it wasn't very nice. It wasn't very nice. Oh, man.
But did that internship help you with finding the GA position?
100%. Because, you know, again, building and again, learned that in the training room at Ball State from everybody, you know, building relationships is so important in our profession. And it's such a people's profession. And I think those that don't do well, they see the medical side of it and they want to just address the medicine and maybe their people skills aren't as good. And then they don't succeed, but, lost my train of thought there.
The Colts internship helped you land the GA position. Yeah.
100%. Because now you have two very well respected NFL athletic trainers on your resume that can help. And you know, a lot of the GA positions at that time were with football, quite honestly. I don't remember many other positions. Maybe baseball did a lot. I guess a lot of GAs covered baseball and stuff back then, but so it got me in the door and I had interviews and offers from my top three places I wanted to go. And again, I don't know what the big deal was. That my damn grades just never seemed to be attractive to some graduate schools. So that was always kind of a sticking point. I remember Steve Yeager at Michigan was like, "Rex, we really like the kid. We're ready for him to come up to Ann Arbor, but there's no way in hell we can get him into our kinesiology department." Another place, Troy, that you're very familiar with. So I didn't get into graduate school, so I needed to figure out a way to stay in the athletic training, get some more experience while I was trying to get into other schools. So I went down the road to St. Joe College in Rensselaer, Indiana, and of course mentioned him quite a few times already, but you know, Sean was there as the head trainer at St. Joe's and took a chance on me and brought me there to work with women's basketball and baseball.
Yeah.
And actually too, you know, I've been so fortunate and blessed with the teams from that I've worked with since I've been a student trainer and all the way till now. Just fun programs that have had a lot of success. Cause you know, even at St. Joe, the women's basketball went to the Sweet 16 and men's baseball, we were two outs away from the Division II World Series that year.
I had to pick it up for you on that one. Yeah. Cause it was the next year that we went to the World Series.
Yeah.
Sean told me I didn't want to go. And Sean goes, "Oh, you'll be back in a couple of days." And we went to the damn final game. 10 days in Montgomery, Alabama. Yeah.
Well,
Danahay is a roommate.
Yeah. You probably needed a little break from the wagon wheel by that time.
Anyway. Oh, no. I tell people, it's funny, you know, I tell people that, and you, I think you'll agree with this, that everybody thought Little St. Joe's was like this place to go die. And I had probably the best from a standpoint of just pure like cohesive athletic department fun in those 2 years that I was up there than I've ever, I mean, other than Ball State, I mean, it just was, you kind of all commiserated in the struggle. And you had a great time doing it. And there was great people there to do it with. And I don't know if you know this too, that there's a long line of some pretty significant athletic trainers that have come out of St. Joe. I mean, Ray Borelli, Vince Stilger. It's nuts that the people that were at St. Joe's, you, Sean, that came out of that school, and the guy that was with the Bears, Fred Cato. I mean,
oh yeah, Cato, yeah,
yeah. It's nuts that people came out of that school from an athletic training standpoint. That I can't think of the guy's name now, but he was with the San Antonio Spurs for a while. Barry, oh, I can't think of it. He's gone now, unfortunately, but yeah, there's a lot of people that came out of that school, but it was a fun time to be there. And I think that you probably had that same experience too. I mean,
yeah, I mean, you were in a place where everybody had to pull together to help each other cross sports, and administrators and custodians, and everybody was in it together and helped each other. Because that's all you had. And, you know, like I said, it sounds like your time there was kind of the same. You know, there was a lot of pride in that division and doing well. And St. Joe's athletics were really good. And so it was fun for everybody to help each other have success, and everyone felt like they had a part in, even if you didn't work women's basketball, you had the football coach and everybody else, you know, really pulling for everybody. And, you know, when you won, I mean, you didn't need many reasons to go to the wagon wheel, but if you won, everybody was there.
Well, if Hoover was paying, you were going.
yeah, exactly.
Well, and the other thing too is that we were blessed. And you really didn't look at it until maybe you were gone a little bit, but you were blessed with we had some great docs with DeLuga and Jeff. I can't think of Jeff's last name. Oh God, Dr. Yeah, you can't either. So it's fine. But
yeah, DeLuga, I got him.
Especially, I mean, Dan did my dad's shoulder replacement surgeries because I just felt confident that he would take care of it. And, so, I mean, we're for a school like that size, a Division II school in the middle of nowhere, to have that opportunity and have those, that support was pretty amazing. So, yeah. Okay. So you're off, you're St. Joe's, you're kind of reapplying to grad schools and stuff. I mean, what were you looking for at that point in time?
Well, somebody not to look at my GPA first. So, no, I know I keep harping on that. People are going to think I have like a 1.9 or something, which I might have one semester. But so, you know, Troy, actually, I was just looking. I had to get my master's. And so, you know, and I did have a lower GPA. So, you know, I had to find something that I could do. And there was a position. And at this time, the University of Arkansas was one of the only two athletic departments, them in Tennessee, that still had divided athletic departments, men's and women's. Two separate ADs, two total buildings were separate. So there was a women's cross country and track and field GA position at the University of Arkansas that I applied for, and had a phone call with another one of my mentors, with Julie Kane, who was the head women's athletic trainer at that time, and had never been to campus, didn't know anything about Fayetteville, Arkansas. And we hit it off pretty good on the phone. And next day she called and offered me the job. And I was like, 100%, I'm going. And I remember.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but was she a CMU grad? She was connected to Sean a little bit. Am I correct in saying that?
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. So I was able to go down to Fayetteville, and still to this day was one of the hardest places for me to leave. When I first got there, funny story, I go to a McDonald's, and you know, I grew up, what, Troy, Neil, you know, 35 minutes east of Chicago. So yeah. I didn't grow up in Chicago, but you know, a little busier. And I go to a McDonald's, and you know, you're always in a hurry, where I grew up at. And this lady taking my order, asking me how I'm doing. Gosh, it's not, it's warm out today. They say it's not going to be. And I'm like, listen, I need to get some food and get out of here. And then after being there 2 years, I'll tell you, I met some of the greatest people that I've met in my career. Actually, I'm going to get a little choked up. We lost one of those people, one of my mentors, Dean Weber, a few months ago. They're actually having a celebration of life this weekend for him. I can't attend, but, you know, just like everybody through my career, teaching you the importance of relationships, and Dean was great. You know, I worked in women's athletics, and we can go on and on about some of Dean's opinions about me being down at Barnhill. But, you know, I went and talked to him, and I said, I talked to Julie first, and I was like, hey, you know, I'd really like to keep my hands in men's athletics and football. So I went and talked to Dean, and Dean was like, you do what? I go, Dean, I work down in women's athletics. He goes, what you doing up here? So, he let me work with football when I wasn't working with cross country, track and field, and built a great relationship with Dean. And he taught me a lot of different things. And a funny guy, funny story about Dean. We were in 2-a-days 1 year, and there's this guy on the table, and he was a guy that was complaining all the time about different injuries. And Dean had this office that was way behind. You couldn't even see him from the treatment area because there were two offices in front of him, and then his was in back. And so, you know, once in a while he'd hear everything that was going on. He'd yell something from the back, and he had this distinct voice. And this one guy kept complaining. So he moseyed out, and Dean's like, hey, what you complaining about? He goes, well, Dean, my ankle, I mean, this shit ain't right. And he goes, what are you talking about? He goes, my ankle, Dean. He goes, hey, how far away from your heart is that ankle? And the kid looked at him, he goes, son, that ankle sprain is too far away from your heart to be anything serious. So you go in the locker room, get dressed, and we're gonna get you ready to practice. And I thought that was one of the funniest things I've ever heard. So, but God rest his soul, Dean. I'm gonna miss him. We would keep in touch once a year. We'd have a good phone call, and I actually, when Dean was sick, got to talk to him a few weeks before he passed. So, Arkansas was great. Worked track and field again, women's track and field. But we were not as successful as the men, but very successful, and worked with some great coaches, and developed a lot of good relationships with Julie, and then obviously with Dean. So,
So, I mean, that's the thing about it. It's like, it seems like it's every step that you take, you can't see it yet, but it's leading you to the next step. And so let's talk about that. You're finishing up grad school. You're contemplating maybe leaving Arkansas or trying to figure out a way to stay down there. I mean, what was the next step for you?
Well, my next step was to try to get a job, a real job, I guess. And, I had applied for a job in February, and I've applied for other jobs. So, you know, I kind of had a small basket of jobs, which wasn't smart. And I was down to the, now guys, we're in June.
Right.
And the only one that I haven't heard from is the one that I applied for in February. So I had already talked to Julie about, Julie, can I stay on? You know, it's getting late. for people to be hiring people. She's like, she goes, best I can do, Billy, is I can keep you on in your GA stipend. That's the best I could do. But, and I was fine. I was like, you know, talking to my folks, and I'm going to have to take out some loans to be able to live for a year. But I mean, I cannot not be in athletic training for a year. So the school that I applied for is Notre Dame, and obviously, Rex and you guys had connections with Jim Russ at the time. And so I came home and I drove over and just introduced myself to Jim because they hadn't hired yet. And I knew it was kind of a risky move because Jim didn't really appreciate things like that. So I did that, but the position that they had was cross country and track and field. And then they interviewed late, and I was told after I got the position that the one reason that they were really worried is because my resume was all football, and they didn't want somebody that wanted to try to be around football all the time. So it is August, and we were actually having a get together at our house with families and stuff from my other people that were in graduate school together, because it was graduation.
Right.
And so we're in August, and Jim calls me and finally offers me the job with track and field, which was great. Cause that was close to home again. Yeah. And I grew up a Michigan fan, but that's a whole nother story about my buddies. So they were all Notre Dame fans. So they thought this was the greatest thing ever. And we did have a lot of fun in South Bend, but so went there to work track and field, and ended up my second year there, ended up being able to work with women's basketball because our women's basketball athletic trainer had some health issues. And I asked Jim, I said, hey, you got anybody in mind for that women's basketball job? He's like, why, do you want it? And I was like, yeah, I do. And he really, you know, I found out later down, you know, Jim really wasn't impressed by that and respect me for kind of going out there and, you know, going after something, knowing my goal was to get with kind of a more high profile sport. So it's the only bad story about going to women's basketball was my first year. So I was still working with cross country, and Jim was like, you need to finish the cross country season. And I said, all right. And I missed so far my only opportunity to go to Duke for a game. So I had to stick back and work our home cross country meet, which again, our men's cross country team was really good. They won the Big East that year. So again, just another team that I've been able to be around. And then working with Muffet with women's basketball was great. And still have Kevin McGuff is a real good friend of mine. Still, he's the head coach at women's coach at Ohio State. And of course, me and Miller got
another St. Joe connection.
Yeah. me and Miller got reacquainted for a very brief time. He took over my position. Muffet tells a funny story. So I text Muffet after they won the national title, and I was like, hey, you know, great job, happy for you, blah blah blah. And she's like, yeah. She goes, you know, I knew once I got a trainer that was worth the shit, we'd win it all.
Well, now Miller's gonna hear this,
yeah,
and he's gonna be sitting there. He's gonna be like, we're not gonna be able to deal with him, man.
I heard his podcast. You would have thought he was patching people together with, you know, wires and needles and doing some, you know, they probably had zero.
Take his ADHD medication that day.
Yeah, he talks about his point guard being hurt. I did all the rehab on her, so.
Hey, things that you only know that you now have revealed. So there you go. Good for you.
Yeah. Yeah. And just, you know, again, to keep hounding on that, maybe I shouldn't, but, you know, the people there and the mentorship there from Jim, and you guys know Jim's a polarizing person. So a lot of people either like him or you don't. And I learned a lot from Jim, actually, and learned not what to do to handle people from Jim as well. But,
right.
But, you know, Carol Banda, who was there forever and is at Louisville, just retired from Louisville, and Skip, that was with Basketball Forever, just retired.
Yeah.
And Chantel. Yeah. And then, you know, I'm sure a lot of people in the state know who John Whitmer was. Yeah. And John was a real kind of a, almost like a father figure to me there, and really taught me a lot of things about outside of the medical aspect of athletic training, of how to manage people and how to kind of see the bigger picture sometime. Cause when you're young, sometimes you don't see the big picture. And between John and Digger, they kind of made sure I was in check every day. So.
Which is not, you know, again, it's kind of like your first job, and it's good to have, I mean, even though you had that St. Joe's position, to have some older folks that can help you and kind of understand what the culture is with things that you wouldn't, I mean, to hey, this is kind of how it works around here, you know?
Yeah. Yep.
And it's not necessarily athletic training wise, but it helps you get along, to go along. And you certainly had some tremendous mentors up there with those two guys to help you do that. I mean, holy smokes.
And Beaner, I can't leave Mike Beaner out. I think Mike's still there. So,
yeah.
And of course, Rob being there now, and Rob is, you know, I know we're all biased, but in the head football director, sports medicine realm, I don't know if there's too many people that are better than Rob Hunt. I mean, Rob is just, he's a class act. He's sharper than anybody. And he and another guy that you could always pick up. I could always pick up the phone and be like, hey, Rob, what do you think about something? And we'll call you back or text you right back. And
oh yeah, absolutely.
Again, just the Ball State Network just never fails you.
Yeah. Well, listen, you just told us that, I mean, when we started this, that you need to be.
Hey, we're good. We're good. We're good, Troy. We're good.
We
can finish this out.
We can finish it up. Okay, let's go.
Yeah.
So you're at Notre Dame and you're working women's basketball, you kind of like, what kind of gets you thinking that maybe you want to do something else?
So, I'm working women's basketball and we're in the Big East at that time. And so again, like everybody, like I was taught at Ball State, you know, you go, you introduce yourself to the other athletic trainers, you get to know them best you can in the little bit of time that you, so I got to know obviously all the women's basketball athletic trainers in the conference and Danielle Henry, who was the women's basketball trainer at the University of Miami, knew that, you know, eventually I wanted to get into men's basketball. And she had called me and said, hey, Carlton's leaving. He's going to take the head position at University of Charlotte. Would you be interested in the men's basketball position here? And of course I was. And that's kind of how that ball started rolling. And then, you know, I almost didn't get it because I didn't have any men's basketball experience. And Scott McGonigal, who was the head trainer at that time, was really nervous about that. And that's when Digger came to my rescue and really did a really good job of selling me to Scott. And Scott took a chance on me to with no men's basketball experience to come over and run men's basketball there at Miami. So, you know, funny story. So I'm interviewing with Coach Hamilton. And if anybody knows Coach Hamilton, they'll relate to this story, but Coach is an amazing person. And he, again, you know, we talk about a lot of the sports medicine mentors, but Coach Ham, there's so much, and I learned this from Jimmy Whalen with the Patriots, you know, there's so much that we can learn from the coaches as well. And, right. And Coach Ham, definitely one of those people, great mentor for me. The year, unfortunately, the only year I was with him. So I'm interviewing with him, and I said, "Hey, Coach, you know, I hear a lot of rumors that you might be interested in going to the NBA." And he's like, listen, Chief, no, I'm good. I'm not going anywhere. So we have a great year. We shared a Big East title with Syracuse at that time. And we actually lost to Bill Self's Tulsa team in Austin. But then at the end of the year, this dude takes the Washington Wizards job. I'm like, okay, you know, I wanted to get into men's basketball, so I did. And then now I'm in Miami, and I'm from the Midwest, and Miami was a great place to live. A lot of fun, but I was probably $200,000 a year short on being able to have enough fun in Miami.
How many of your family and friends came down to visit you that year?
You know, a few, but as you know, you're so busy. My grandfather actually used to come down all the time, probably the most to come visit, because he was retired, and we'd get him out golfing once in a while. So
that's cool though.
But again, you know, just the relationships that and the people that you met down there, and you know, and that's when I really started getting some physician mentors. John Uribe is the head team physician down there, or was, and Uribe and his fellows and the other people that work in his group taught me so many things, and the intricacies about having a good physician. And we had him at Notre Dame, and like you said, St. Joe's, and obviously with back in the day with Dr. Matchett and other people at Ball State. But my best man, you know, I met him down in Miami. So, but Miami was a good experience, got me into men's basketball, and we had some success down there with Coach Ham. Things fell off a little bit with Coach Clark, but learned a lot about medicine. And you know, I brought up Jimmy Whalen. Me and Jimmy are good friends still. And the way I met Jimmy Whalen, I was there for my interview, and Jimmy had just come by because he worked there, worked football there for a while before he went to K-State and Tampa. But I met Jimmy for like 10 minutes in the training room, and I'm not lying. Ever since then, me and Jimmy has been pretty good friends, and I can call Jimmy whenever I want. And it's just funny how those little things, connect people, and you stay friends. And again, another huge mentor when I was looking at, after Coach Ham left, I was looking at some other jobs and, some football jobs. And Jimmy's like, you know, you're kind of at a crossroads, Billy. You either need to decide if you want to go the football route or the basketball route, you know, but you got to go hard either way. And that was some great advice. Cause my dream job was to work at Michigan football, and actually got an opportunity to interview there, from Miami. So that was pretty cool. But
So
Miami was good. A lot of fun down there.
you would have had to re-acclimate back to football, though. I mean, that's the thing about it. I know last year when I took this high school job, I'm like, damn, I had it so good. Sitting in the gym, you know, I didn't have to go outside. I didn't do that crap. Layer up, none of that stuff.
Yeah.
And now I had to go do it again. So, but it was all good anyway. But yeah.
Yeah. I definitely don't regret the path.
Yeah. You're at Miami are you still looking for something, or is this something that just kind of popped up and you're like, okay, it's on my radar. What do I do?
Well, you know, after Coach Hamilton left, Miami was a place that I didn't see myself living for a long time. Just me personally. I had a lot of fun and being on the beach. And I mean, there's so many things that are cool about Miami, but as far as longevity of my career, I didn't want to spend it down there. I've interviewed at Michigan. I interviewed it for the head job at St. Louis. That Rex helped me a lot with that. I was looking at things, and then our baseball athletic trainer at Miami at the time, he was head first assistant with football and baseball, Kevin Blasky. He's at Oklahoma State now. He came to me. He's from Salina, Texas, or Kansas. And he said, hey, you looking at that Kansas basketball job? And I was like, I hadn't. Should I be? He goes, are you crazy? He goes, yes. And I was like, all right. So I put my name in the hat. And, I think because of Ball State and the other people I've been around, you know, sports medicine wise, my resume was rock solid. What put me over the edge here at Kansas, getting to Kansas, was Coach Hamilton and Digger Phelps really helped me there. I get the opportunity to come here. It was funny because my roommate at Miami at the time, he was getting married in Topeka the Saturday before my Monday interview here at KU. So that was a little dicey. And I was actually working along with men's basketball. You know, again, those are different days too. So Miami, while I was there, they brought back women's volleyball. And obviously I like volleyball from my Ball State days. So I told Scott, because I don't know how it landed that they needed somebody so quick, but so I worked the last year I was there, I worked women's volleyball until first official day of basketball practice.
Right.
And then after basketball, I worked outdoor women's track and field.
Oh my goodness.
So I was actually in Stanford at the USA Outdoor Championships, and then met a bunch of my friends from Miami here in Kansas, and we went over. So the funny story is that Coach Self wasn't in town during my interview. So I was like, I got no shot at this. This is just a token, you know, because Coach Hamm and these guys. So
yeah,
they probably already know who they want. They just got to run some people through some interviews. We had finished the wedding ceremony. We're back at the hotel having some lemonades, and I get a call on my phone, and it's a seven, you know, it's a Lawrence number. And I'm like, oh, I better take this. So I step out the room, and it's Self. And all the guys are like, you know, come on, get back in here, you know. And I'm like giving them the cut thing of your throat, going, knock it off, you know. But so yeah, I had my interview with Coach Self on the phone. Had never
probably
met him.
Probably more relaxed than you would have been if you'd done it in person.
You know, probably, you know.
And, never enough lemonade.
There's never enough lemonade.
yeah. So, you know, good interview with Bill. And he, you know, the one thing that Bill told me that surprised me, doesn't surprise me after being with him for 21 years, but it surprised me then. He said, you know, Billy, all I need to know is that at the end of the day, you gave 110% to, and did everything that you could to get somebody back. He goes, I know that sometimes there's just not enough hours in the day, to get somebody better. He goes, but if I know that you're doing everything that you can, I'm never going to talk about injuries or say that we didn't win because of an injury. And, that stuck with me, besides the other, you know, the one thing that, so he opens up the phone call. He's like, hey, let's just get something straight right now. I'm like, okay. He goes, hey, I've got a call from Coach Ham, from Digger, and a couple other guys. He's like, I've been doing this a little while, Billy. He goes, ain't no way that any athletic trainer is that damn important to any damn program. He goes, so let's just cut the bullshit on that. On those phone calls. That's how the phone call. but 21 years later, man, there's not another coach that I could see myself working with, because this Bill gets it. He gets sports medicine. He understands what we do and appreciates it. And, you know, it's been great to work with Coach.
Yeah. Yeah. And
we tried to get, we Troy, we tried to get Neil out here. We had a head training position. Neil came out and I don't know, you know, I think he wanted some provisions in his contract for 19 scholarships for all his kids. I think there was some sticking point there that
an endless lemonade.
No, but I was excited. I was like, oh man, we're going to get Neil back, or Neil here, I should say, but I'd be back with Neil and probably for the best, because who knows where that would have gone. But, I might not have made it to 21 years at Kansas.
You might not have. Yeah, endless lemonade would have done it in for you. I'm telling you right now.
especially if Neil would have brought his intramural basketball squad with him, we would have been in trouble.
And Billy, I can never thank you again enough for that opportunity, and that was a very tearing and turning point in my career also, and to remain at Ball State obviously worked out pretty well. But I look back on that opportunity an awful lot, and some really good people out there that you introduced me to, and you really set me up well. And I can't thank you enough for that.
It would have just been interesting though to see Rex and Neil and his Kansas stuff and Rex and his Missouri stuff embracing at the 50-yard line during the Kansas-Missouri football game. And all the people would be going, what the hell is that? The war's still on. Let's, what is that?
And I would have been the one wearing shorts.
Well, now he wears shorts all the time because he's living the life.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, down in Daytona Beach. You know. Oh, by the way, I happen to work for a living. Yes.
Hey, you know, of all the things, the funny things that you take away to this day, and everybody, everywhere I've been, especially here, comments about it all the time. I have never, besides on a game day, I have never wore pants to work. I always wear shorts.
Yeah.
Even when we're in Ames, Iowa, and I'm trying to load the bus when it's 35 degrees below wind chill. Yeah. And I'm questioning, dude, just why are you continuing to do this? Wear shorts, that is, not be an athletic trainer.
Hey, it's what you do, right?
It yeah. is.
Yeah, it's what you do. It's, you know, it's you. It's how they know it's you. You're not some imposter. It's how you know it's you. Well, one thing that I kind of, as we wrap this up a little bit, but one of the things I think you've touched on this throughout the podcast, and certainly you've brought this up, how important it is to have relationships and stuff. But is there anything else that you would kind of dispense in wisdom of your overall 30-year career as an athletic trainer that you would just want some, let's say, some young athletic trainers to know about?
You know, I think, and again, these are all things that were learned in Muncie before. You know, I've been blessed to be able to do and to work with the programs that I've worked with, and mainly because it's the things that it's what I personally wanted to do in the career. It's not because my way or my path has been any better than anybody else's. It's just, for me, it was a dream that I had and goals that I had, and I was able to get those. And that all started in Ball State, and the people there that helped me to get to where I am. You know, the main thing I think is, a few things are, you need to work as hard as you can. And specifically clinically, you need to continue to sharpen your tools and your game, because the sports medicine field can pass you pretty quick if you don't. You need to enjoy and being around the athletes and understand that at the end of the day, and you might not get this till later in your career, at the end of the day, it's pretty cool that these athletes or the patients that you work with, they're really relying on you to get them better, and that's pretty cool. You need to develop great relationships. You need to meet all the people that you can. You don't need to be in a silo. And it's hard sometimes, especially in college now, that everybody has their own athletic training rooms. And, you know, it used to be everybody was in the same training room, and you helped out with football. You helped out. I mean, you just, you know, I think it stinks, because I don't even know. I couldn't, if they had 50 athletes sitting in our Olympic training room right now and 20 of them were football players, I couldn't tell you who any of them were.
Right.
And they might be all starters, which stinks, because, you know, like, that's just what I knew coming up through Ball State, is that we all work together and you gotta can't sweat the small stuff. You gotta let a lot of, especially at the collegiate level, you gotta let things roll off your water, run off your back, and keep the focus that, you know, I know it's lip service a lot in college sports, but, you know, for those of us that are living the student health and safety and welfare, actually living those words, you got to keep reminding yourself that that's truly what we're doing. And we're trying to get these guys better or gals better, and trying to mentor them a little bit. And also the at the end of the day, really, and I've enjoyed this, guys, I really appreciate you inviting me to do this, but, you know, we had a lot of laughs here in an hour and 15 minutes or whatever that we've been doing this, and you got to have fun I'll speak specifically to college athletes. You got to have fun in the training room. I mean, at the end of the day, Skip Meyer used to always say, You know, I used to come in, you know, frustrated after a practice, you know, oh, this, I can't get this person, this coach, you know, Muffet's on me, blah, blah, blah. And he would always say, he'd look at me and be like, hey, in 5 years from now, is anything that you're yelling about and stomping around the athletic training room going to mean any, going to mean anything? He's like, then stop. Who cares? If it's not going to affect you 5 to 10 years from now, then don't worry about it.
Yeah.
And that was good. Even though he was trying to get under my skin even more,
it was a good effort to get under your skin, but a lot of wisdom that was dispensed right with that. And I think, I think it's hard for us as athletic trainers, particularly at the collegiate level, because it does, everything is even at a small, even at a school like Ball State, it's out there. You're under some form of a microscope. You're definitely under more of a microscope than a lot of us were. But you're right. I mean, you can't, I couldn't recall. We remember some significant stuff that happens, but the stuff that may have ate at us the most, nobody remembers. Not even the kid. I mean, I've gone back and talked to, I had a kid that came back this summer, former Ball State athlete that's playing overseas, that was hanging out in Indy, and he wanted somebody to look at his knee, and I'm looking at his knee, and I'm like, do you remember when you did this? And he's like, oh man, I don't remember any of that. And I was like losing sleep over this kid on this particular injury, and he didn't even remember it. So yeah, it's hard to have that perspective when it's right in front of you, but I mean, Skip was right. I mean, even the own athletes don't even think about that. So
right. Yeah, you gotta, the main thing, and if you want to be good in our field, and I just told this, we're going to take on my first emergent student, a young gal from Tulsa here next year, which I'm excited about, but we were talking to her and, you know, it is truly about, you know, what you want to put into this profession is, what you're going to get out of it. And if you're not willing to put a lot into it, don't be upset when things probably don't get to where you hope they would, because I've just, in my experience through the years, that has rang true from all my mentors, all the people that I've worked with that have been successful. And then maybe the people that were like, gosh, I wish I would have did this. You know, that message seems to always come up, that, you know, you get what you put into it. And
right,
if you don't put much into it, you're probably not going to get as much out of it.
I just read a tweet yesterday. It was from a guy that is a high school athlete trainer that was talking about how some of these entry-level master students, they get frustrated because they don't, you know, they don't get that job that pays, right, you know, 60 grand right out of grad school, and they don't get this and stuff. Or, and he goes, he was saying that, you know, part of what he was alluding to is that some of these kids like skip their clinical rotations, or they're not consistent in it and trying to make those connects in their clinicals and stuff. And he goes, you need to go to your clinical rotations. You need to connect with people. You need to put forth the effort, just like you're talking about. And then those things will come. And even, you know, you did opportunities that were put in front of you that most people might turn their nose up, and you weren't scared to do them because you knew you were going to get in there and do it. And in your time, you made opportunities to advance what you wanted to do, or get, kind of do what your agenda was. But doing it in a way where you took something away from that would help you in the next step. And I think that's the thing too, is that don't be afraid to do stuff that gets you out of your comfort zone for a while, so that you can have the opportunity to do what you really want to do down the road.
Yeah. And immerse yourself in those opportunities. Like, yeah, when you're working cross country and track and field, I mean, I that was the most important sport and the most important athletes on campus to me, wherever I was. And even, you know, here, Obviously, men's basketball is well known and high profile, but you know, I also work with men's golf, and I'm really proud and have a lot of pride working with them and getting them back as well, because those guys mean a lot to me as well. And and you have to immerse yourself in that. And again, it's like we said, it's just what you put into it.
Yeah. Well, listen, I know that you have someplace else to be. We're really late with that now. So I really appreciate you sticking around and telling this story, because, again, like I told you, it's a great story. And there's a lot of lessons to be taken away from it. And I'm glad we had some fun along the way, too. It's always great to see you and have some laughs. So I really appreciate you being on here, Bill.
Thanks, well, Bill. Thanks a lot, guys. Great spending time with you.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys. It really has.
Yeah, so we've gone off the roll with Bill Cowgill. I want to thank Neil Hazen and Bill for being guests on the podcast. Neil being the guest host, I should say, on the podcast today. So it was always great to have Neil around to kind of jog my memory on some stuff in the conversation. And that's what this was. And I know Bill was a little bit concerned about how it would come off. And I think he was happy at the end to have a great conversation, because that's what it was. Bill's got some great stories, and I really appreciate him telling those stories for his athletic training pathway in his career. And it's been an outstanding career from that standpoint. So again, give us some feedback. You can do that on Twitter at OffTheRollPod1 or on Gmail. And my email address is OffTheRollPodcast@gmail.com. You can reach out to me on my personal Facebook page. Just look me up a little bit and we're good with that. We'll be back. We're winding down here. We're in April, so we're winding down in what I would consider the podcast season for Off the Roll. So we're hoping to line up some really entertaining and interesting guests to kind of ride out this season of season two. So be aware, be available, be ready to listen, because we got some good ones coming up. So everybody have a great day. We'll talk to you later. Bye.